I'm now joined by Ben Harbert, portfolio manager at Core Values Alpha. They're behind the Core Values Alpha Greater China Growth ETF, ticker symbol CGRO, C-G-R-O, that just launched in October. And I'll tell you, it's an interesting concept. So it obviously invests in China, but this only holds companies that don't compromise U.S. national security or values. It's a unique approach. And Ben is now on the line with me. Ben, welcome to the podcast.
Great to be with you, Nate.
All right, so let's jump right in here. This ETF is billed as an America First China Equity Investment Strategy. Obviously, you are seeking alpha here. You're seeking out performance. This is actively managed by you. So take us through your process. How exactly are you going about this?
So we start top down. We look at the large industry trends that we think are going to shape China growth over the coming years, and also that are going to see some nice pops in the short term. We are actively managed, so we can trade in and out of positions. And then we look to find a common ground between that China growth and American interests. And so we spend a lot of time in Washington, kind of with our ear to the ground, understanding what's coming down the pipe in terms of sanction, what types of businesses might be perceived or are falling afoul of American national security interests or American values. And then we take all those ideas that we've kind of whittled down into those core, what we believe to be growth drivers, and those have to be actively managed because it's just so challenging to passively approach this market today. And then we filter them with our risk committee. And our risk committee is made up of current and former, both people that are active in the U.S.-China dynamic, maybe from a think tank or, kind of outside of government policy perspective, and then those that were just recently sitting in government, so people that were in the White House national security types of seats, military or other roles. And they really help us kind of do another layer of due diligence beyond what would even be possible kind of from a desktop. And that enables us to kind of get that list to a place where we feel like we are protected against current and future derivations. And then, we end up with a list of names that actually outperform the indices. We kind of do well by doing good. And so by being actively managed, but also by putting that risk screen in, we end up outperforming, not underperforming.
And just to be clear in terms of the types of shares that you own, because there are a lot of different shares in China, my understanding is you do hold mainland China, Taiwan, and then China special administrative regions such as Hong Kong. Is that correct?
That's right. We're not restricted, and so we have a pretty wide berth. And we also invest in, say, U.S. businesses that have significant exposure to China as well.
All right. So I want to come back to the ETF in a moment, but as I know you're well aware, China has been a difficult place to invest from a performance perspective. And I know we've had an uptick here recently, but I saw a few stats last week from strategist Todd Sohn that I wanted to share with you. And I know you're intimately familiar with these, but they're almost hard to believe. So over the last 30 years, the MSCI China Index has posted a total return of 0%. 0%. That's been accompanied by 22 intra-year corrections of 20%, which if you compare that to the S&P 500, the S&P 500's had 6, and an average annual correction of 30%, which is twice the S&P 500. And so, Ben, given that, why should investors even consider allocating to China right now?
Sure. So, I think it's, obviously there's plenty of counter statistics we can give. For instance, that the CFI index is up to 3X over the last 30 years and whatnot. But I think the key to understand is that we are, we invest in cycles. And there have certainly been incredible bull markets within China. We entered China as a private firm, investing as a private side in the 2010s. And made tremendous returns investing in the growth of the China technology boom. And we believe that, we're entering a similar cycle today. And so, we don't have to be China apologists to do well in this fund, and we don't have to be, China 50-year investors. What we need to do is think kind of week to week, month to month, what names will really drive, outsized growth, particularly in the verticals that we're excited about, things like domestic brands and consumption, domestic travel, kind of Chinese companies that are going global and bringing hardware and software to global consumers, and then some of the businesses that are really kind of doing that integrated supply chain in the hardware space, you know, the likes of the EV makers. The way we look at all of them is that they are monstrously underpriced. And if you were to kind of look for an easy strap line, you know, it might be something like, you know, America today, particularly S&P, is trading at all-time historic highs. Well, our market and our companies are fundamentally still doing very well at trading at historic lows. And in many instances, these companies are trading below their pre-IPO levels, or even trading below the cash they have on their balance sheet. And so our view is that we're essentially sitting in China 2010, and we're getting in at the ground level for the next boom into businesses that are dominating in their respective verticals, and we can go into some of those, and that are really kind of fueling that fourth industrial revolution where China is a global market share leader. So that's what we'll focus on rather than kind of the long, long trends.
Let me ask you this. So obviously, I'm assuming you believe your approach that you just described with SEGRO is superior to other options out there. But if you'll just indulge me for a moment, as you know, there are numerous other index-based ETFs and actively managed China ETFs. And so the question I have is, if you're sort of limiting the investment universe here to only companies that align with American interests and values, what are you giving up? Because typically, when you constrain an investment universe, that should lead to underperformance over time relative to a strategy that isn't dealing with a constrained universe. So what's the trade-off here with an ETF like SEGRO? Or am I not thinking about this properly?
No, you are. And ironically, I think our data proves that we outperform the other both China active and passive managers that we would compare ourselves against over the period of our existence. But the reason why doing well by doing good is important for us is because if we can kind of ferret those types of businesses that might be following afoul of U.S. values or national security interests early, we're avoiding future pain. We're avoiding companies that will see themselves ending up on some kind of a blacklist or a sanctions list, companies who might find themselves not able to access U.S. capital, U.S. supply chain, particularly core components. And so there is very much a fundamental economic driver behind this, that we are kind of preventing kind of future pain by dealing with it and cutting it out today. And our view, again, is that there are plenty of really strong businesses in China that aren't falling afoul of these and that are non-controversial. And because we're actively managed, rather than buying a basket of the market and having our overall returns degraded or diluted by some of those other bad actors or slow performers, we can just kind of surgically slice out the key areas of growth that don't fall afoul of these criteria, and we end up with a better set of results than if we were to just buy a basket or a broader market ETF.
As I was thinking about our conversation here today and trying to come at this from the perspective of an advisor, even just a retail investor, I'm curious how you think they should approach emerging market exposure overall. Let me explain that. If I had a guess, and actually we can see it in the assets under management, we know many investors simply look to an index-based broad emerging markets ETF, like, say, VWO or IEMG. And even if they look to an actively managed broad-based emerging market ETF, fine. Now, clearly, you're making the case that investors should sidestep some of the China companies that these ETFs own. And so let's say investors agree with that and they allocate to SEGRO. I'm curious how you think they should pursue other EM exposures, because they can't do it through the quote unquote easy button approach of VWO or IEMG. So do you suggest individual country exposures to complement SEGRO, or how should an investor or advisor think about incorporating this into a portfolio if they want that broad EM exposure?
Sure. And I should preface this by saying I'm kind of an EM junkie. I spent the last 18 years of my career in emerging markets in the Middle East, Africa, South Asia, Southeast Asia, and East Asia. Our view is that this should be country by country, and that China, it's unfair to even clump it with other EMs because it's such a different beast. It is the global kind of complement to the United States across all of the kind of major corporate and technology verticals. So there will be a splinter net here, and you'll get kind of an American search engine if China search engine, an American hardware company, a China hardware company, and in many instances, they will live in balkanized worlds of operation. And so you can kind of double dip by investing in China parallel to the, particularly today's levels, and get exposure to a lot of those similar models that where there won't kind of be cross-border pollination. And then after that, the way we would look at it is go country by country, because again, there's such a variance of regulatory environments, levels of corruption, levels of kind of macro issues, be it currency devaluations or other kind of impediments to growth across a broader basket of emerging markets. And so I wouldn't want to throw Brazil in the same basket as, say, Indonesia or Vietnam in the same basket as Nigeria. And so I think you've really got to do look at them independently, and we do as well. We'll actually be launching a India-only ETF following up on this China ETF for similar reasons.
Ben, just a few minutes left. I'm going to see if we can put your entire China investment thesis into like 3 minutes. You get to demonstrate your knowledge of the Chinese market right now. I'd love to have you just talk about that country's economy overall, because earlier we highlighted the lack of stock market performance. But putting that aside, there are clearly some scary headlines out there to the average investor and advisors. I've seen headlines around their property markets, banking system, demographics, which I actually touched on earlier in the podcast. Obviously, geopolitical concerns. There's a lot out there. And so what's the case for future economic growth in China?
Well, I would say first that all of those negative narratives, and there are plentiful, as you said, have benefited in some ways our strategy, because our view is that we're positioning China to kind of be the contrarian trade of the next several years. And our view is that when you achieve a contrarian trade is you come into a market and, when there are negative narratives around a certain asset that aren't necessarily true to form and true to the realities on the ground. So, for instance, the property market has been a major negative narrative around China. But the reality is that when you scratch beneath the surface and you really do your homework, you find that it's nowhere near the scale of what we experienced in the West and in kind of the GFC in 2008, that the China regulatory environment, actually for those of us sitting on the ground, is far more predictable and tradable, and it's easier to kind of position yourself within the regulatory slipstream than try to fight against it. And when you do so, you end up with an incredibly lucrative stream of investment opportunity. And so if everyone is running for the hills from China for fundamentally driven reasons, Chinese companies on an individual basis, and again, within our specific verticals, are thriving, that tells us that we're really well positioned and focus on those names rather than be broader China apologists. So for instance, we love integrating supply chain, kind of fueling the fourth industrial revolution space. Someone like BYD just became the world's largest exporter of electric vehicles. Sales were up 62% in 2023, and 84% of that were EVs. China tourism, for instance, domestically is migrating back home rather than going abroad, and that resulted in, over the New Year period, this year, for instance, tourism spending being up 44% year-on-year and 8% over pre-COVID times. So the numbers are fundamentally sound, and what we're excited about is there's kind of a dam building where there's about $6.1 trillion of household savings in China, which haven't been unlocked. China's not yet really been truly a domestic consumption-led economy. Chinese sovereigns and kind of other state funds are only allocated about 6% to local stock markets, where in the U.S. we're about 30% allocated. And so there's a huge amount of demand coupled with capital that's sitting on the sidelines that can flush into these markets as soon as that narrative starts to shift. And so we're positioning ourselves to get ahead of that flow, and we think that it could be one of the kind of most hated rallies in history, just with people who sat on the sidelines and say Bitcoin over the last year or two are now kicking themselves. I think you're going to see similar reactions to China come this conversation, say, a year from now.
Well, Ben, I think you did an excellent job of squeezing the investment thesis into a few minutes. Really interesting perspective. Congratulations on the launch of this ETF. I certainly wish you the best of luck. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Nick.
That was Ben Harburg, Portfolio Manager at Core Values Alpha.